Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. In the early weeks of COVID-19, people struggling with fever or cough or breathing problems were often coming to the hospital through the emergency room. But I know you remember that testing was limited, and it was a challenging time to distinguish COVID-19 patients from people with other respiratory illnesses. My next guest is going to describe his experience at the UC Davis Medical Center. He is Dr. Nathan Cooperman. He is an ER doctor, the chair of emergency medicine at UC Davis Health, and professor of pediatric emergency medicine. So we're also going to talk a bit about that emerging COVID-linked disease in children. Dr. Cooperman, thanks so much for making time to talk with me on Insight.
Thanks, Beth. It's a pleasure to be here.
I don't know what kind of hindsight you have at this point, but how were those early days of this disease in the ER as you were just starting to put the pieces together?
That is a really interesting story, because as we all face this new pandemic that we had not seen before in our lifetimes, we were busily preparing, first of all, how to best care for patients in a safe fashion, and secondly, how to be safe ourselves, how to protect ourselves so that healthcare providers were not falling ill and not able to care for patients. So that really required, the first few weeks were a bit pandemonious in the preparations of caring for these patients and caring for ourselves.
Do you remember having a moment where you stopped yourself and looked around and thought, what are we in? What is this?
We had so many moments of feeling, this is surreal. We haven't seen this before. There was a lot of fear because we were not sure how it was spread and how intensely it was spread. And yes, we had many anxiety-prone moments in the early phases. But as the pandemic evolved, particularly in those first 4 weeks, we became more comfortable as we had sufficient protective equipment for ourselves, and we started to get a handle of how these patients were presenting. But I will say, to this day, it is still an evolving enigma.
So now, 2 to 3 months later, what's the situation in the emergency room? For example, what's it been like this week?
So it's really interesting how the evolution of this has taken place. And first I'll say it's evolved very differently in different parts of the United States for a lot of reasons, one of which is early versus late institution of public health measures like lockdown and distancing, etc. But early on, we had, I wouldn't say a tidal wave, but we had a wave of COVID-19 patients, and the emergency department was busy and busy with sick patients with COVID. But as our wave was not that big, then after the wave subsided, we found our emergency department only half full, which was very typical for emergency departments around the country, except for hot spots like New York City, Detroit, New Orleans. And we had a very quiet emergency department in which, yes, we still did see COVID-19 patients, but we were finding that patients with non-COVID disease were not coming to the emergency department, which at first we were reassured by. It allowed us to focus on COVID care, but then we realized that patients with non-COVID disease were just avoiding the emergency department and presenting late with their illness. So that was sort of like the first hump of busyness with COVID, and then the second sort of depression with emergency departments half full. But now we have slowly been increasing our volumes, and now we're probably at 3/4 of our typical volume, and partly because I think the message has been sent out there that it's not safe to avoid your routine medical care, and also to avoid emergencies that need to be addressed by us. And we've conveyed the message that, in fact, it's very safe in the hospital here. And Sacramento finally has been very fortunate. Out of the 50 biggest metropolitan regions in the country, we are the lowest in prevalence of COVID-19. So we've been very fortunate in that regard.
It's also one of the reasons, Dr. Cooperman, that much is being said right now about this whole pandemic situation being blown out of proportion. I know you've heard that, and it's coming from all kinds of sectors. And with the pressure economically that we're going through, I think that that message is being more amplified. As a healthcare professional who has seen this through the framing of an emergency department, what about that belief that this was blown up to be much bigger than it actually was?
Yeah, let me take that question straight on. This was not blown up bigger than it was. This is a very serious disease. And all an individual needs to experience is to see one of their loved ones suffer from the severe aspects of this disease, and they will understand how big a crisis this is. So what happens, of course, is that there are big peaks in pockets. So in New York City, almost everyone has had a loved one or a friend affected. And in areas where there's a less prevalence, it's less common. But I want to be very clear, this is not blown up out of proportion. This is a very serious disease. And for those that are sick with this disease, it's one of the scariest things that we have had to try to care for, because it attacks the body in lots of ways, in its blood vessels, in lots of different organs. And patients are can get very critically sick with this. And as you know, Beth, because I'm sure you know you're reading in the literature, is that if you are sick enough to be placed on a ventilator, your chances of survival are not great. So this is indeed a very serious condition.
So five UC Davis emergency room physicians were sent to help out in New York. Can you give me some perspective in terms of their experience compared to the situation here?
Absolutely. So when we passed our local peak here at UC Davis of COVID patients, and we were in this relative lull, we realized that, you know, we have our brothers and sisters in arms across the country that needed help. And that was mostly acutely true in New York. So we have five very altruistic, brave volunteers who went to Queens, New York, which is the epicenter of COVID disease in the United States, and they worked at a hospital called Elmhurst in Queens, and they were desperately needed. And the situation there was very different than our situation at UC Davis. A lot of critically ill patients in the hallways, with the care being very good but very chaotic, just because the numbers were outstripping their supplies of clinicians and equipment. At UC Davis, we were fortunate that we never reached that point where the number of patients outstripped our resources, either human or physical, like PPE and ventilators. But their experience in New York was completely different, highlighting that within the United States, we are different countries of COVID, in a sense, with hot spots and quieter spots.
I'm talking with Dr. Nate Cooperman. He is an ER doctor at UC Davis Medical Center. He's also the chair of emergency medicine at UC Davis Health and professor of pediatric emergency medicine. So we're talking about New York, and let's shift gears to talking about children and this illness in children that is linked to COVID-19 but has symptoms of Kawasaki disease. Will you expand on that? What do we know about it now?
Sure. So that the situation in children is fascinating. First of all, and to frame it, this disease, of all the disease, COVID disease in humans, less than 1% or around 1% is in children younger than 10 years of age. So it's infrequent in children, and it's the vast majority is mild disease. So that's a reassuring thing to clinicians and to parents and to society. But having said that, two emerging conditions have been described. One is that there is a subset of children that do get very sick with COVID in a way that's similar to adults. There was a case series published in JAMA Pediatrics just this week of around 50 children in intensive care units throughout the country and the world, where they described the treatments and the outcomes, and the risk factors were similar to adults. These are children who are typically older, a mean age of around 13, and the ones that were at greatest risk had what we call comorbidities. That is, they have other important illnesses that put them at risk. Obesity was a factor, again, similar as adults. But now there's a separate group of children. Now, these children are much younger. And just to frame it for your listeners, you know, Kawasaki disease is a disease that was described about half a century ago, and this is an inflammatory condition, that is, where it's a self-limited inflammation of the blood vessels, but it typically presents with fever, rash, the mouth or lips can be cracked and red. The lymph nodes in the neck are typically enlarged, and the hands or feet can be red or swollen, and finally the eyes can be inflamed, that is, they can have conjunctivitis. This is the typical Kawasaki disease that afflicts maybe 1 in 10,000 children, and they're typically young, 3 years of age. Well, what's evolved and what we've seen with COVID-19, and now it's been described in several places, and a really important article just published in Lancet about this, is there's a Kawasaki-like syndrome that is linked to COVID-19, and it's being called the pediatric multisystem inflammatory syndrome, which looks like Kawasaki. The children are typically a bit older, like I said, an average of 7 years as opposed to 3 years. They usually have most, if not all, of the signs and symptoms of Kawasaki disease. Most of the children do have evidence of COVID-19, either by testing from the nasal swab or from the blood. But the difference is that these children have more severe disease. So Kawasaki disease does attack the heart and can give inflammation of the coronary arteries, that is the main arteries leading to the heart. But in the COVID-related Kawasaki disease, there's a much higher frequency of cardiac, that is of heart involvement, with children presenting with critical illness and low blood pressure and signs of heart involvement. So it's still, just again, not to to scare the listeners, it's still very infrequent. However, the prevalence of this condition is now 30 times that it was before the COVID era. So it's a rare disease at baseline, and it's still very uncommon, but we are seeing a fair amount of it, usually at the after the patient is, the nasopharyngeal swab is negative for COVID and with more serious manifestations of Kawasaki disease.
All right, let me add a few details. More than 100 children in New York State have been diagnosed, and as you said, more than 60% tested positive for coronavirus. I guess diarrhea and vomiting can go along with it. But here's my final and important question. Do you think that this is a disease that's going to move across the country like COVID-19 has done? Or do you get the sense that it's going to be isolated to something going on in New York or in that region?
Yeah, a very good question, Beth. Actually, this is nothing specific to New York. This is linked, to our best knowledge, based on the blood testing and whatnot, to the disease itself. So there are a lot of cases described in the Lancet article I described was from Italy, and it's been described in the UK. It's been described all over the world. The interesting thing is that it doesn't present like typical COVID at the time that someone has fever and breathing difficulties and whatnot. It presents typically later on.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And that's likely why the majority of children, their swabs are negative. It's a late finding. And it's likely related to what dermatologists have been seeing. They have been referred children who have their toes and fingers are really red. It's likely one of these sort of vasculitic, that is inflammation of the blood vessel, symptoms of late COVID-19.
All right. I'm with you on the point that we don't want to unnecessarily scare people. But as with the movement of COVID-19, talking about something ahead of time when it's somewhere else in the world and perhaps moving this direction or making people aware of symptoms, I think in a way becomes public service, public health importance. So I think we'll continue this conversation over time, Dr. Cooperman.
Great. But can I just add one last point? And it's a public health message, is that, you know, the hospitals, now, hospitals are very safe. You know, we all are in masks. We have very little COVID. We only have 2 patients in the hospital with COVID. And my public message to your listeners is that if you're ill, please come to the hospital, come to the emergency department. It's safe, and we are here to care for you. And also, don't avoid bringing your children in for their routine immunizations, and women should be getting their mammograms, because it's a very safe time to come to the hospital, and I don't want people to avoid their regular health care.
All right. Message delivered. Thank you so much for your time. Be safe, and thank you for all the amazing work of the frontline workers there.
Thanks so much, Beth. Appreciate talking to you.
That is Dr. Nate Cooperman from UC Davis, distinguished professor of both the departments of emergency medicine and pediatric medicine. You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio.